The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Hi there, Chris. You are better every day, starting from a very high standard. You are just on fire every day.
Hey, Chris, thank you so much for everything you do for us to keep us informed.
Good morning, Chris. Love your show, pal.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
No, look, I know what yesterday was meant to do. So do you. The question is it working on you? Is it dispiriting you? Is it getting into your head? Did yesterday make you feel downbeat, glum, pessimistic, concerned? Did it work? Did you spend a lot of time stewing in that excrement show yesterday? Because if you did, that's exactly what it was designed to do. It was made for two types of Americans' consumption. The partisan leftist, who has nothing good or positive or productive to talk about moving America forward. The leftist Democrat office holder, who knows the destruction of the country is what they're presiding over, the ruin of the country is what they're presiding over, and they don't either want to talk about what they're actively doing to make it so or what they're not able to do to stop it, whichever point of view you want to take. I'm more in the former camp than the latter, but either way, you're dealing with a country that is in rapid decline. And so yesterday was for the consumption of the leftist who doesn't want to talk about those things, that our border is wide open, that COVID is, as a practical matter, here and here to stay and not under control and never was anything we could get under control. They don't want to talk about Afghanistan or inflationary costs or the jobs market. They don't want to talk about any of that. What they want to talk about is one man, Donald Trump. And so yesterday was designed for the leftist, the office holder, the Democrat, who resurrected the political corpse. And by that, I don't mean that he's literally dead politically, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, he has no controls over government right now. He holds no office. He's a guy in Mar-a-Lago in Florida who's firing off statements from his email account. That's what he is. He's not president of the United States. He's not even a candidate anymore. Folks, when I watched that stupid old man we're supposed to pretend is president give that speech yesterday, I asked myself, have I hit my head and we're in the middle of election year 2020 again? That was a campaign speech. That wasn't a speech about January 6th. That was a speech from a stupid old man who thinks he's still running for office and thinks he's still running for office against Donald Trump. If you really listened to that, what you heard was a political party and a president who know they don't rightly belong there. And they know a huge swath of this country knows it too. They have a conscience about this. This is wearing on them. They're not a year into this. Trust me, folks, I know this is difficult to believe because I know they're behaving aggressively and insanely, and you think they're holding all the cards. This is not the behavior of a political party holding all the cards. This is the behavior of a political party who knows they got away with something, and nearly a year into it, they are desperate to figure out how to hang on to it. And how have they figured out how to hang on to it? The only way they know how is to continue to whip up and gin up a notion that right around the corner is a looming threat to the country that only they can stop. And now that they know it ain't Omicron anymore, What they're now trying to pivot to is Donald Trump is lurking in the shadows, and your right to vote somehow is the very fabric of our country. Your right to cast a vote is under attack, and it's all because of this man in Mar-a-Lago who has no power anymore. That's what all of yesterday was about. Dick Cheney showing up with his daughter in solidarity. The whole thing was a presentation to remind the country that Donald Trump is still looming large out there. So in one sense, I say politically he's dead, and by that I mean he holds no power. These people are supposedly in total control. So why are they screeching and hissing and yelling so loudly about Donald Trump yesterday? Because they know they don't belong there. They know the power they achieved is ill-gotten. They know they've exploited the fears of the American public to be where they are today. And they know their time is fleeting. And most of all, and most importantly, this is where I want to specify the difference. While Donald Trump is not in power right now, they still understand that Donald Trump is the most powerful figure in American politics today by a lot. It's not even close. You do get that, right? I think sometimes we forget that. And no matter what you think of Donald Trump, and I realize that there are, I don't know how many of you in this audience, maybe a third of Trump enthusiasts who have kind of fallen off the Trump train or are, I don't know, moving on to DeSantis enthusiasts or don't really want another round of Trump. I know who you are. I've heard from you. I get it. I'm not trying to make the case one way or the other of the way forward for Donald Trump. I'm telling you, it is undeniably true. The most powerful figure in American politics still at this hour is Donald Trump. And it's not even close. And they know it. And if you listened to him yesterday, let's go to number 17, Eddie. If you listen to this stupid old man, we're supposed to pretend it's president's speech. You talk about living in one's head rent-free. This had nothing to do with the Capitol building and being assaulted and democracy and voting rights. This was about going back to battle with a guy they know they didn't rightly defeat. If you went out there and you played, well, I don't know. I guess it takes a bit of a conscience. And I know some of you are shouting, they don't have a conscience, Chris. That's what you're suggesting, is they have a conscience. No, I'm saying that they know that the American public's onto them. They know. They've seen the polling. Folks, do you realize why the media never shows you Biden's approval ratings? Have you noticed that? You never see what the American public thinks of Biden and how Biden's doing. I mean, not in any, you hear it, you read it, I know, from time to time. But remember, every day, almost daily, there was some tracking poll about how much Donald Trump sucked. And American adult, you know, some flim-flam poll that would always be put out almost, certainly weekly, and all the cable news did it, constantly telling you why the American public was unhappy with Donald Trump for some reason. You don't get that with Joe Biden, but they see it. These are political pros. There are people that are devoted day and night to doing nothing but studying polling and the tone and the vibe and the feel of the American public. And what Democrats know and what this phony administration knows, they stole one. They got away with it. And so I ask you, you play around a golf now and again, Fast Eddie, and I don't know how fast and loose you are with the rules versus a straight up, doctrinal golf rules guy you are. I'm not. I mean, I normally play with guys that say, just drop one and hit it again. Or, pull it out of there. But I've also played with guys that say, no, you hit that thing where it lies. Nope, you take a penalty stroke for that. And you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So I don't know what kind of golfer you are. Which one?
I am more like you. I even go as far as if I'm playing with friends and they hit a good shot, it's like, oh, I'll just drop up there with you. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, but I don't know. If you're playing for money or if you go out for a round and you're playing straight up, all right, may the best man win.
Yeah.
And let's say you're in different carts. He's over there. You've hit an errant shot. When he's not looking, you pick up the ball and move it back into the fairway. Oh, found it. I hit a beautiful shot. And then let's say you win by a couple of strokes. Do you feel good about the win?
Not at all.
if you're playing straight up rules based hardcore, we're gentlemen here. We're playing the way we're supposed to play. You don't. He'll never know.
Unless there's an insane amount of money.
Yeah. And, okay, you won. You won, but what you did to win, he never saw. You picked up the ball a couple of times and placed it here, gave yourself a favorable lie. You clearly broke rules undercover that he didn't see, and you, air quotes, won. Now, I don't know what your conscience level is with that, but if you've ever done something like that before, you won. And so you tell yourself, well, I played a pretty good round all in all, but nagging at you in the back of your mind is, you didn't do it all on the up and up. There's no denying you had a good round, but you didn't do it all on the up and up.
Right.
Right? And I'm sincere when I tell you, I believe that's what the Biden team knows. They know that everyone else knows, except here's one difference with that scenario of the game. This would be like the rest of the gallery saw you picking up your errant shot and dropping it in the fairway, even though your opponent did not see you do it. And they're out there screaming, hey, you can't pick up an errant shot and place it back in the fairway and not count that as a stroke. You can't do that. And you flip them the bird.
Shut up.
And
yes,
declare yourself a winner anyway. Yeah. That's what we're watching, and the Biden people know it. They know we know. They know they got there through ill-gotten means, and they know that they can't achieve it again unless this public is convinced that it's too scary out there to vote in person. In order to pull off what they did here in Philadelphia, for instance, in order to take Pennsylvania again, what they cannot have is election reforms, election integrity movements that have happened in places like Georgia. They can't pull off this massive vote counting fraud unless a couple of things happen. Number one, people are too scared to be voting in present to supervise it. Number two, states control their own elections. That's more important. I probably should have flipped them in terms of order of importance. The most important thing to Democrats right now is making sure the game they cheated playing back in 2020 isn't found out. Followed by making sure states don't fix the game so that they can't cheat at it again. And so this is why they push so hard for voting rights legislation. And they make it sound yesterday like yesterday was one to commemorate a dark day, but two, the war continues. We're still at one another's throats. America is teetering on the brink of dissolution if we don't pass voter rights reforms, because waiting in the wings, and here's what they know. What they know is the country en masse, and this includes Democrats, don't believe Joe Biden is running anything. They know we know it. So imagine, number one, knowing you got there by ill-gotten means. Number two, knowing that everyone knows it. And number three, knowing that the most politically popular guy who rightly should be there, that you basically screwed out of getting there, is still hot on your tail and out there lurking and still very, very powerful, influential, and popular. And could likely rear his head again in a couple of years with states who have fixed the system and return and cause them all a lot of heartburn. And that's across the political spectrum. It doesn't matter. Now, this is, we're talking exclusively, not exclusively Democrats, but we're talking independent of Democrats. We're talking Democrats, Republicans, independents. People that are institutionalists are all equal parts horrified of this man at Mar-a-Lago. Horrified. He is so scary to them. What he managed to achieve, the disruption that he created during the time that he was there, was so jarring. This is like a rabid dog that they're trying to put down. That's what this entire show was yesterday. This had nothing to do with an assault on the Capitol or an assault on democracy. None of that's true. This was all about one guy, Donald Trump. That's what yesterday was. This, what you should have called yesterday, was not a solemn occasion to commemorate. What yesterday was a political rally masked as some solemn day of reverence and remembrance and respect and honor and all these things. It was none of that. What yesterday was an attempt to put down the political future of Donald Trump by trying to convince the country that he's dangerous and that everyone that votes for him is dangerous. But here's the problem with that strategy. The American public is exhausted. We're exhausted. They have overplayed their hand to such a degree on COVID. And I believe this. I was just sharing this with a friend of mine last night. He said, "Are you watching Pelosi?" And I said, "Are you kidding me? I wouldn't watch that sloppy choppers out there." Apparently, last night at one point, they had a moment of silence for themselves. Is this true? I heard there was a eulogy last night. My friend texted. He said, "I just heard Pelosi call for a moment of silence, quote, in their memory."
I think, honestly, that was for the officers that had perished. So that was the five officers that were named. She names them, too.
It should be in the Democrats' memory.
Yeah.
But this isn't about them. This is about all of this. You understand this. This was all about Donald Trump. But I think, and I said to my friend, I go, I actually believe they've completely overplayed their hand. This is not, January 6th, folks, is not on the national conscience. People are you're one of two people. You are either someone who never bought this election of 2020. You certainly don't view, you have problems with January 6th. No one wants to see disruption in our nation's capital. You know, symbolically speaking, don't misunderstand what I'm saying for the political. Symbolically, everyone wants to see our institutions working. Everyone wants to see our institutions as something that we all, regardless of partisanship, can, you know, join together, come under one roof. Yeah, there's a desire. It's a noble one. It's an honest one. It's probably forever dead, I'm sorry to say, at least in modern history. I think it's probably going to be dead. But there's a desire amongst most of us to view things like the Capitol building as at least one place that we as all Americans revere and we respect and our institutions and these sorts of things. And again, that doesn't, don't misunderstand me as saying revere and respect the people in it. I'm not saying that people have profound respect for Congress people. In fact, the polling has always been, I mean, ever since I've been following politics, I've never, ever heard a poll where people love Congress. No one loves Congress. And this is also my point. But we revere the building. We revere the transition of power in this country. And these kind of traditions were disrupted. And whatever you think of that, however that happened, whether you think it was full-blown hijacked or whether you think it was totally typical and then along came this marauding band of awful Trump people who, you know, stormed the Capitol. But whatever you think about the day, this is not on the national conscience. People aren't sitting around a year later thinking deeply about January 6th. And it was a one-off day. Not a great day, and we can all talk about what caused that day, what led to that day, who was involved with that day. But it's not on the national conscience, and you know why? Because the Democrats have not made that their focus. The Democrats have tried to light brush fires all over the country about different things, like the Supreme Court, or mostly, it's been mostly... I mean, with Afghanistan, we've certainly talked about the border. We're looking at inflation. But mostly their lives have been centered around, their politics have been centered around COVID. And so even the Americans that would be inclined to believe that January 6th was an insurrection, they've been too consumed with what? Masking and shots, 3 and 4 and 5 shots. Folks, the human condition does not have the bandwidth to be this outraged and hyperbolic and panicked about all of this at once. They just don't. Everyone's exhausted. The Democrat Party has been telling the American public for the better part of 2 years that they should be terrified and panicked of a virus and that they should give up all their liberties and freedoms. Their kids should stay home. They should be behind a mask. They should socially distance. They should close their businesses. They should never go to work anymore. The guts of this country have been ripped out. So there are a lot of Americans who feel very dispirited and demoralized, and still others who are racked with a lot of fear. And it's mostly over COVID. I mean, they've made Omicron sound worse than AIDS in the 80s when we didn't understand what it was. So do you understand how you only, the American public only has so much bandwidth? And so when I describe it to you that way, then I think you look at January 6th, and while you may watch it and you may seethe because you know how disingenuous it all is, and you may worry that somehow this is convincing or selling or turning or ginning back up an American public who had either forgotten about it or we were moving beyond it or whatever. No, it didn't. That's what the Democrats wanted to do yesterday. Their goal yesterday was to try to re-inject this notion that the biggest looming threat that the nation faces and that we should all fear collectively is the rise again of Donald Trump and the people who support him. But the problem is, nothing's better under the stupid old man. So it's very difficult to tell the American public, even those who hated Donald Trump, these people that have been convinced that all the world is so terrible and terrifying, and to step out your front door is you're taking your very life in your hands. Now to tell those people, but trust us, we've got it. And that last guy that's gone, he was much worse, and he's out there, and he could come back. Ooga booga. Like, people don't buy it, folks. No one believes what happened yesterday is true. And while some may say, I mean, they'll give you the obligatory lip service that, you know, the big lie, you know, the Liz Cheney thing. I mean, yes, there are leftists who continue to talk like leftists. It's not ingrained in the fiber. Like, abortion is a religious tenet of the left, right? The abortion thing, banging on the Supreme Court doors, that fear that the Supreme Court is going to take away abortion, that's in their core. That's in their being. That's real. This January 6th thing is for show. It's play acting. It's not real, and everybody knows it's not real. Everyone knows the country's not better off. Even Democrats who really did vote for Joe Biden know things aren't better. And nobody thinks Donald Trump is a threat. Donald Trump is not in office. He was, air quotes, beaten. And that's the way we roll in this country, is when a president is not doing his job well, he's tossed out and we get a new president. I have more to say on this. Let me get into a break. And I'm probably not doing the best job explaining this that I need to. Fast Eddie's giving me the eye. And plus, we got this big snow going on out there. Fast Eddie has that look like, I don't follow you. I'm going to have to do better. 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. 3 to 6 inches today. A lot of people probably not going anywhere. We've gotten very good at not going to work anyway. So I suspect people just, when they see weather like this, they say, eh, I'll Zoom to work today.
That's a remote day.
I think most people are doing that anyway. Like, I think we've become very well equipped at just not going to work. So, I don't know. We'll check in with Butterworth, see how the roads look today. Pretty sloppy out there to get started. They say by what? This afternoon, this evening, it should taper off?
Yeah.
All right. But it's really coming down this morning. Be careful out there if you are, in fact, driving. And thanks for listening to Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. All right. Let's just go to... I don't want to spend too much time listening to too much of yesterday, but let's go to that clip I was talking about a little while ago. From... I'm not sure which one was the statue. He was in Statuary Hall yesterday, and I had to really... Were it not for the podium, I would have and just barely a hue of skin color. I wasn't entirely sure which one was the statue and which one was the live real man there in Statuary Hall. But we do have audio that he was there and saying words anyway, and here's some of it.
Speak plainly about what happened in 2020. Even before the first ballot was cast, the former president was preemptively sowing doubt about the election results. He built his lie over months.
Giving him a lozenge already with the clearing of the throat.
Facts. He was just looking for an excuse, a pretext, to cover for the truth. He's not just a former president. He's a defeated former president. Defeated by a margin of over 7 million of your votes in a full and free and fair election. There is simply zero proof the election results were inaccurate. In fact, in every venue where evidence had to be produced, an oath to tell the truth had to be taken, the former president failed to make his case. Just think about this. The former president and his supporters have never been able to explain how they accept as accurate the other election results that took place on November 3rd.
Yeah, well, here's a few things, Grandpa. Number one, anyone who's been worth their salt has explained from the very, very beginning that whether you're talking about the vote count or not, if we're really redoing this, this is about the constitutionality of the election. In Pennsylvania's case, as I've said exhaustively, before you even get to how the votes were counted and whether there was fraud, before you even get to that, let's talk about the constitutionality of the way the election was conducted, which was not constitutional and was never heard in a court of law. The constitutionality was challenged. The way we counted and then ultimately certified the vote in Pennsylvania was challenged by multiple states. Pennsylvania was sued over it. And ostensibly, Pennsylvania is one of the reasons you are president today. Multiple states' attorneys general sued Pennsylvania over the way they conducted the election. Pennsylvania's own legislature begged Congress not to certify the vote count because of the way we conducted our election unconstitutionally. I mean, lower courts have since, just this last week, a court said we're not going to count ballots without signatures, even though our Secretary of State said that's exactly acceptable for the presidential election. We did not constitutionally conduct the election appropriately. So he says, how do you explain accepting the rest of the results? What they're saying, what they're acknowledging, what he's doing, I realize, I got people tweeting at me saying, no, Chris, you're missing it. What they're trying to do is delegitimize Donald Trump and keep him. No, I know all that, but ladies and gentlemen, this isn't about Donald Trump. This is what I've been trying to explain, and I'm not doing a good job doing it. I mean, it is, but it's not. They've overplayed their hand. I think everyone's so caught up in their strategy that you're missing the forest for the trees here. What I'm saying is, when you rape and pillage the psyche of the American public for the last year over things like COVID, when you scare the living hell out of the American public that death is looming right around the corner and they've got to obey, and you keep people under the thumb of government, telling them they can't enter places without paperwork and masks, and their kids can be in school, can't be in school, masks on, masks off, back, forth, blah, Omicron, now we're fine. Oh, here's another variant, now we're fine. Two shots, three shots, booster. Do you understand how that gnaws at the American public psyche? And do you understand that typical people only have so much bandwidth? You know what I mean when I say bandwidth? You can only give so much. You can only be so outraged. You can only be so scared. You can only carry that on just as a healthy system. Your human condition does not allow, whether you're a person of faith or not, the human condition does not allow for a perpetual state of hyperbolic terror and fury and rage about multiple things at once. You can't have all kinds of pots boiling over on the stovetop politically and expect everybody to follow it and feel equal outrage and panic over it all. So when you put all your eggs into the basket of COVID, and you tell people that COVID is the reason that they've got to fear the very existence walking out the front door every day, you can't then, on a dime, turn the calendar and say it's January 6th, and isn't it horrific? And remember how horrific that day was? And now, we're not going to talk about COVID. Now we're going to talk about the threat to your very right to vote and the, quote, threat to our democracy. Your fellow American and a former president who's no longer in office is this threat to the way our government functions going forward. You see, the American public doesn't believe government is functioning now. There is no fondness for these people. There is no emotional investment in these people, is what I'm saying. Yes, Democrats love authoritarianism, and yes, Democrats look to elected leaders for guidance and all of this stuff, but they've used their power and their authority for COVID. They get the one. This is about messaging. Yesterday was about trying to convince you. This is not about I understand that they want to try to use obscure tactics to keep Donald Trump from ever running from office again. I get it. And yes, I understand that they want to screw around with the filibuster. And I understand all their parliamentary trickery and all of their digging legalistically into trying to strategize. They did impeach our president twice. Did that work? See, that stuff doesn't matter to me. All of their parliamentary gamesmanship stuff is boring to me. It's circus, carnival act, sideshow stuff. Nobody's paying attention to it. Nobody cares. What yesterday was trying to sell the American people that they're in danger. You're in danger. And I'm telling you that even leftists, even Democrats, if they're honest, they won't be. But take it from me, I know. They don't believe they're in danger. They now know, with distance from Donald Trump and a year of what we've been through with this stupid old man we're supposed to pretend is running something, they know we're not better. In fact, in many ways, it's demonstrably worse. They know things cost more. They're seeing supply chain problems. They hear and see and know that this vaccine push didn't seem to stop anything. It's not resulted in a return to normalcy. We're not, would you say any American would honestly, if you hooked them up to a lie detector, we were told that Trump was a big norms violator. And you heard all the time from leftists, I just want normal to return. I just want an adult back. Right? You heard that all the time. Do you think anybody honestly thinks that this is normal, that we're living through normal times, that America has returned to its center and that everything's on balance and we're normal and everything feels happy and safe and sane and typical and traditional and Rockwellian, the way we're comfortable and familiar with America? Do you think even leftists think that's true? I know they don't. There is no one who really, at their core, believes the nation is well and running effectively. They know it, and you know it, and there's 1,000 obvious reasons. And so yesterday was one big gaslight show to try to convince you that there was more panic, there is more panic around the corner. And this is why we've got to do something like reform the way we vote permanently. And poll after poll after poll, when the polls are shown, which they aren't anymore, as I explained earlier, the American public believes in voter ID, voter integrity. The American public understands at its core and believes that votes, elections run by states. It's in the Constitution, number one. But the way we've conducted the vote in this country throughout history, the way it's constitutionally designed, the American public is not unhappy with it. That's not real. The Democrat Party is unhappy with it, not the American public. So yesterday was a sales pitch. They've got to convince you. The American public has to be convinced they're in danger. The American public has to be convinced the vote is hanging like a loose tooth and only the Democrats can save it. That's what yesterday was about. And I'm telling you that the American conscience doesn't have it in itself to even take it on as an issue. They don't believe it. No one reveres this body enough to feel that way. Like, how do you... This would be like if somebody came to me and said, Chris, there's a cauliflower shortage. And only you can save the cauliflower. It is quite possible that we may not ever get cauliflower to market for mass consumption again. You've got to do something. The cauliflower is in real danger. I hate cauliflower, folks. I have no respect or care for cauliflower whatsoever. And if you told me that cauliflower didn't exist anymore, I wouldn't care even a little bit. And if you wanted me to get ginned up and whipped up and upset about no more cauliflower available in our stores, now maybe there are some people that really love it. I'm not saying no one loves it. I'm saying I don't. And I think if you polled most Americans, they agree. Most Americans don't like cauliflower. Some of you do. Most of us don't. And so if cauliflower was really important to winning an election for a political party, yesterday was a big sales pitch for cauliflower and why it was in jeopardy and why Americans have got to get really, really, really scared about saving cauliflower. And there will be some, but not most of us. Most of us will go, I'm really, you know, the fact that your building, your little building got stored, Like, remember I say the old adage, most people hate Congress but love their Congress people. Like, most people like their member of Congress. Not in my case, but I mean, your member of Congress comes home and they do the ribbon cutting and they tell you, you know, they got the funds for you and they built a bridge or they helped the Children's Recreation Center or whatever. They got a federal earmark. Hey, thank you, Congressman, this and such. But as a body, whoever says, you know what I love is Congress. You know who's doing a great job, who's doing a bang-up job? I am so happy and so pleased with and so satisfied with Congress. No one says that, ever. The polling for the popularity of Congress is always in the toilet. So the fact that on this day, a year ago, this building got charged by angry people, however the circumstances came to pass, I'm not relitigating that. Do you think in the national conscience and the psyche, people are going, oh no, not Congress? No. Much like I'm not going, oh no, not cauliflower. Also, you've spent the last 2 years raping us emotionally over COVID. We don't have, as a collective, as a body, we're panic fatigued. We're crisis fatigued as a country. And so are leftists. They've overplayed their hand. Yesterday was a colossal overplaying of the hand, is what I'm trying to tell you. What yesterday was designed to do was be a huge sales pitch, and yesterday, you're going to have to trust me on this, ladies and gentlemen. I know a lot of you don't feel it, and I know a lot of you watched that from morning to night last night, and you're seething over it. I would just encourage you to understand what it was and understand what it didn't do. It didn't work. I know the media is telling you it did. I know you're hearing a lot about it. I know it was wall-to-wall lies. Of course it all was. It was a sales pitch to cover up for an ill-gotten, air quote, win in 2020 and to tee up an attempt to maintain power and control by, one, making the sales pitch that the opposition to them is dangerous and everyone that opposes them is dangerous. And selling that fear, number two, selling it so that you will give them the authority to change the rules so that they will stay in power in perpetuity. Nobody thinks they're doing a good job, and no one respects them enough to hand the keys over to them like that again. That's what I'm telling you. You may call it stupidly optimistic. I got to go with my gut, and I go with my gut because, one, anecdotally, I see no polling that suggests I'm wrong. I've seen no evidence that suggests I'm wrong. In fact, what is missing from all of this, the American public's point of view. You're not getting opinion polling. You're not getting interviews with the American public. You're not getting focus groups. You're getting none of that. All we're being fed is a steady diet of what the media thinks and what the Democrats, who are the media, think. It's a perpetual sales pitch that we should be frightened. And the American public is exhausted, and they're certainly not frightened, and they don't think things are better, and they don't have that much reverence and respect for these jackwagons that are supposedly running things now. So it's very, very hard to convince us that they're in danger. Because they're cauliflower. That cleared up. I just needed a little more runway. That's my position on it. I'm not interested in all of their stupid parliamentary shenanigans, the committees and the maneuvering and the thing they found in the Constitution to make sure Trump's never going to. They've impeached him twice. Think about how stupid this is. They've twice impeached a man. And the second time, he was already out of office. They're stupid. This is stupid. It's not real. Gaslighting in the highest degree is what we're living through, folks. Don't get distracted with it. This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. And what do I make of Ted Cruz, you're asking? Now that one's a little more complicated. Gonna get into that coming up, by the way. Tucker Carlson invited Ted Cruz on his show last night. It didn't go well for Ted. In fact, Lion Ted is back. Uh-oh, hang on.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer. A Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Hey, Chris. Good morning. I love you. You're awesome.
Hello, my sanity in the morning.
You got my adrenaline flowing before I even had my coffee here this morning.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Great to have you here today, Friday. Short week for most of us. Snowy today, too, so a lot of people probably just going to stay home and pack it in, even if you even... I wonder if... there are a lot of people that probably didn't even go to work this week at all anyway. I don't really have a sense anymore that people are even going to work. I really don't. I know people that just don't go to work. It's the most amazing thing. What's happened in the last 2 years, kind of economically, geopolitically, people moving and people's jobs transition. Let me tell you something. I went to breakfast with some friends of mine over the Christmas break. And a couple of them are mid-management, you know, kind of, I'm going to need that report on my desk by Friday, Clark, kind of guys, you know. They're those guys. They've made a little something of themselves. They're in charge of some people. They talk in terms of things like my team, you know. They say things like my division. I always wished I could say that. Well, my division. I head up a division. I have nothing. But I've got a couple of friends that talk like that now. My team, my division. And so over breakfast, they're telling me about their division and their team and these people that they lead. And that COVID, like everything, has dispersed their office and they have been working remotely for over a year. Now, I haven't seen a lot of these guys in years. So this is the first time we're seeing one another in person. And they're telling me that for the last couple of years now, almost, they have been working remotely. And they were telling me toward the end of the month there in December that, yeah, January is rolling around and I am really... I'm a little uneasy about what I'm about to walk into. I said, what do you mean? Well, my bosses are now talking about wanting me to call the team back to the office after almost a couple of years of working remotely. And I don't know how it's going to go. I said, what do you mean how it's going to go? He said, well, I've already put in a call to a couple of people and they've already told me I don't have any intention of coming back. I don't want to. And they said, well, what do you do, Chris? Like, what do you do? I mean, for 2 years, we've been working this way. And you say, well, now it's time to come back. And they go, I don't want to. We've been doing this just fine. Thank you. And I went, wow, that does sound. Another guy, get this. One of the other guys who's got a similar situation with some employees he leads, he said, Chris, Here's how crazy it's gotten. One of my employees that I used to manage that came into my office every day just up and moved to North Carolina, just moved, and has been working remotely from North Carolina for the last year for me and never told me she moved. And so I said, need you to come back in the new year. And she was like, well, I sold my house and live in North Carolina now, so no.
Oh, man.
Like, that's happening all over, you know? It's just... So I don't even know that people drive to work anymore. I swear to you. I mean, I know because we actually see the traffic. Butterworth tells us the Schuylkill and 95 backed up. So, I mean, I know people are driving to work, but I'm stunned at the number of people that just don't go anymore. Let me put a quick bow on it, and then I want to get to Dasha Prewitt here, who's waiting patiently. She's a candidate challenging Brian Fitzpatrick in the first congressional district of PA. I want to just finally say that yesterday was about what's coming today. Yesterday was about what's coming today. I suspect that in short order, very soon, if not maybe even by close of business today, but certainly by next week, the Supreme Court of the United States is going to slap down Joe Biden's unconstitutional vaccine mandate. Much like the court has already slapped down the other unconstitutional breaches of authority that this stupid old man we're supposed to pretend is president has done. The courts continue to step in and say, you can't do that. You can't do that. What does he keep saying? Well, we're just going to do it. And by the time it makes its way through the courts, a lot of you will have done what I wanted to do, even if it's not legal. That's their new play. We're just going to try to bully and scare people into doing what we want until the court tells us we can't do it anymore. So coming to a theater near you is a huge Biden slapdown that you cannot force employees to take up medicine as a condition of work per the federal government's edict. That's coming. People ask me, are you sure? Are you confident? I mean, I'm not going to bet my life on it. But you would really, if the Supreme Court doesn't see it that way, you're going to find this host about as glum and pessimistic about the prospects of this country as I'll ever be. This is about as easy and slam dunk and obvious as it gets. I've talked to no one, even the most kind of moderate, left-wing court watcher and legal analyst, who's disagreed. There's no one I know who has disagreed. I've not read a single opinion, even from leftists, who disagree that the court is not likely to say you can't force people to take a medicine as a condition of employment. Not the federal government in any way. And once that comes, this is what I mean, that's what yesterday's about. That he's about to be handed another huge unconstitutional slapdown. This COVID thing, they put all their chips in on COVID. So you can't now then try to whip the country up again about January 6th. Like, we don't have enough. There's not enough room. We're a pretty in mass. I'm not saying you and me. We're smart. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. Mass media, mass consumption, mass formation, psychosis, that term we learned. You can only use one play. You can't leverage that in multiple directions. You got to keep everybody focused and confused on one thing. It starts to lose its efficacy when you start to say, everything's a panic all the time. I mean, it's FDR, right? The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. With Democrats, the only thing we have to fear is everything all the time. It's exhausting. And people after a while get wise to it and start going, I don't feel like you're being honest with us anymore. It feels like everything is scary. And when everything is scary, nothing's really scary. After a while. All right. 610-850-0990. So the first congressional district is one that has been the bane of many conservatives for some time in the southeastern portion of this state. Brian Fitzpatrick is the congressman. He is famously one of the 13 Republicans that gave us the huge, huge spending bill at the end of the year, among other things, where he's crossed the aisle and voted with Democrats. He wins by a whisker, and every election cycle that Fitzpatrick's been on the ballot, since I've been covering it here behind a microphone in Philadelphia, there's been this same age-old frustration with what do you do about them? Now, as a political calculus, he believes in order to stay in power, he's got to do this business where he's got to flirt with Democrats. And the political class and a lot of Republican organized party types will tell me that that's just savvy politics. That's just a guy who can't be. I'm told all the time by party politicians, you just can't be too conservative in the first and get away with it. You just can't do it. You've got to play it smart. You got to be down the middle. You got to flirt with Democrats every now and again. And that's the only way to victory. And that's why Brian Fitzpatrick has managed to hang on. And Chris, you can't go kicking down a door and being too conservative out there. You're never going to win the first congressional district being too principled. I hear it every election cycle. Dasha Prewitt disagrees. She has run before and is back at it again, taking on Brian Fitzpatrick in the first district. And Dasha for Congress is the website, by the way, D-A-S-H-A, DashaForCongress.com. We've been interviewing Republican primary candidates who would like to take him on. And Dasha, first of all, welcome into the show. It's good to talk to you again, and Happy New Year.
Yes, good morning. Happy New Year. Hard to believe we're in 2022. I feel like Joe Biden. It's still 2020.
It does. It feels like nothing's changed, like the last year didn't even happen, is what they'd like us to believe anyway. But so, Dasha, I think I set this up pretty well. I mean, we're in a spin cycle when it comes to this first congressional district, aren't we? It's wash, rinse, repeat. We've gone through this a few times. Can we make the outcome different this time?
Absolutely. I think people are infuriated. There's a lot of grassroots groups that are going on who are coming together, and they're loud and they're making their voices heard. I mean, Bucks County was one of the only counties on this coast that actually were able to turn their seats more to red than blue. Unfortunately, Delaware County, where I ran the last time for the 5th Congressional District, it's not ever going to be red again, probably for decades. We turning bluer and bluer every single time, where Bucks County is the only one that's actually becoming more conservative. Parents are waking up to what's happening in the schools. They're infuriated. They are sick and tired of the school teachers' unions taking such a strong hold on their kids' education. And it's not going to be easy, but I think it's doable.
There's interest, heavy interest, obviously, in dealing with Brian Fitzpatrick and injecting real conservatism in that seat. What makes you different than maybe the other candidates? We've had a couple of other candidates on the show, and we want to give equal time to all candidates. They're all welcome here, and so we're glad you were able to make time. How do you differentiate yourself? What would you say to voters as they're trying to consider which Republican should be best going forward?
Well, besides having a little bit of experience from running the last time, because that's part of the battle, even though I don't think you need to have experience, but it helps. Being an immigrant, I love to put this disclaimer, a legal immigrant from communist Russia, and watching what is happening to our country. Not that we're communist, I would never say that, but watching these Marxist views leaking into this country and seeing the complete destruction of small businesses, the destruction of our farms, the destruction of our energy independence, the destruction of our country. Actually, I think in Congress, and Senate, for a lot of times, there's a loathing for our country. And we need to start bringing that passion back, that love, that American patriotism, that you're proud to be an American. This is the greatest country in the world. Think about this. The best country in the world. People from all over the world come here for a better tomorrow, for a future for their children and their future generations. And we are destroying this. Our youth is spitting on our flag, burning it. There's this attack on our police officers, of lawlessness. You know, I'm watching this craziness going on. I mean, it's like, literally, I think it's a mental illness that is, I don't know if it's corona, like, but whatever's happening, but it's this loathing towards our country. And I think it's been going down that path for a while. And we need to start bringing true conservatism and true passion and true patriotism back into our country. And I think I have that.
Do you, how do I say this? It always seems to be a litmus test these days. I don't know if you heard me talking about, you know, political operatives will always tell me, I hear from Republican establishment types all the time that, you know, Fitzpatrick plays it right because you've almost got to dance with Democrats every now and again just to placate moderates because, you know, Brian Fitzpatrick's only won by a whisker as it is with tons and tons of money. And the only way you do that is with tons of money and flirting with Democrats from time to time so that you're seen as, quote, moderate and rational. So, you know, a full-blown embrace of Donald Trump and conservative principles, it's recalcitrant, and there's no way you could ever win even if you had the kind of money because there aren't enough people in the district, the first congressional district, that embrace a Trump-style conservative, that there's not enough. You need moderates, too, and the only way to get them is to pretend to be a Democrat sometimes. That's kind of the thinking, cynically. I'm sure you've heard that.
You know what? It's not... There's a difference between dancing with the Democrats and negotiating with the Democrats. You know, there are... There's still middle of the line, the Kennedy Democrats that are looking at what is happening right now and think this is lunacy just as much as we do. Mm-hmm. You know, you can negotiate, but when you have to make decisions that are, I don't know, maybe it is Brian's belief, like the transgender bill, I know it's called the equality bill, but you know what, when we're throwing the word equality and then with the undertones of nobody's equal because of the skin color, the gender, the whatever. Now we don't even have a gender. I think I'm just going to identify as a unicorn going forward. You know, it's like you said before, if this is everything, then this is nothing. It's the same type of theory. So you can negotiate certain things, but you shouldn't negotiate when it doesn't resonate with your true beliefs. And that's been the problem. You know, it's funny you were talking about Ted Cruz, and I watched that interview yesterday as well. And good for Tucker. It is. It's, you know, you can't sit on two stools. That's I don't know if it's an American thing, but we have this in Russia, too. You can't sit on two stools. You have to pick one. And that's been the problem, is that our politicians have been sitting on two stools. It became about money over country over people. You know, it's if you can't raise certain amount of money, you can win. You know what? I ran during the corona the first time, the corona point one. And, you know, and it was very difficult to raise money. I ran in a D plus 28.3 district, and I only lost across by 40 at 40%. Which is not that far. And if you think about the stats for the PA1 district, which is D plus 2.3, the odds are pretty well in my favor. If you stay true conservative, you know, I believe in unborn babies' lives. I believe in their rights. We need to fight for that. If you're going to save caterpillars and run around and look for life on Mars, then you better protect the life that we have on this earth.
So, Dasha Prewitt, you believe then, in summary, you believe you can be a true principled conservative and articulate true principled conservative points of view and win in Bucks County. There's not, it's, in other words, there's not a faction of voters that might be inclined to vote for a Republican as long as you don't sound too Republican-y. And I've heard that for I don't know how long in Pennsylvania Republican circles, that you can be a Republican fine, just don't be too Republican-y. You gotta be considerate of the suburban women and things. I hear that all the time. So what of that?
You know what? You can win. You know, it's interesting. Again, in PA5, I had people coming up to me and saying, I'm not voting for Trump, but I'm definitely voting for you. I like what you stand for. Mm-hmm. And I am America first. I believe in America first. If you don't believe in your own country and you're running around and looking at and trying to protect everybody else, then what are you protecting? What are you saving? Again, yep. This is the greatest country in the world. And it was the greatest country in the world because we had conservative views. Even under Kennedy, the views were, we were not that far separated. The Democrats and the Republicans, there was a sliver of, just a sliver of what we disagreed with. Now it's so far, far on one side. And I think Republicans, for the most part, are kind of a little bit closer to the middle. You know, I think you can bring over the independent voter. I think you can bring in those, softer Democrats who still believe in this country and want it kind of, they want the morals back. They want the spine back. They want the America first policies, particularly now. You were talking about with people not going to work. I'm one of those people who are working from home. And let me tell you, with $4, per gallon on gas, you don't want to go back because you don't want to spend that money on commuting.
Right. And I would just say, the idea that Democrats are somehow moderate, like they're the moderate choice, the moderate option, or that they've moderated in message is ridiculous. So that's always my answer to that idea that, you can't be too conservative, or the Republican brand, you can't be too pushy. I always say, and the alternative is what? The Democrats who are so moderate and so reasonable and so inclusive, which of course they're not, Dasha Prewitt. If people want to be helpful to your campaign or learn more about you, if they don't know you yet in the first congressional district, you're taking on Brian Fitzpatrick in a primary. How can people help and get to know you and reach out?
So we're actually going to be in Bucks County on Wednesday the 12th. There's going to be an event with Doug Mastriano that we're doing. He's been a great friend for years. And, he's great if people want to come out and hear his message as well.
Now, is that an official? I'm sorry to maybe you didn't intend to talk about this now, but I mean, is he in it now for sure, or do we know, or is he said?
I can't spill the beans. It's not my monkey, not my circus, and we have to be respectful.
Okay, I think we might have gotten a scoop there, but that's okay. I get it. No, I get it. So anyway, you were saying you're going to be in Bucks County on Wednesday.
We're going to be in Bucks County on Wednesday at. I'm trying to find all the fast details. The best way is they can go on my Facebook page. It's Dasha for Congress. The four is spelled out. There's also Dasha Prewitt for Bucks County first. And there's my webpage is Dasha for Congress. They can reach out that way or email me at Dasha for Congress. I know it sounds a little repetitive, but
no, that's good.
I think
that's easy.
It's a, yeah, keep simple, stupid, right?
Dasha but, at Dasha for Congress. And again, the website is DashaForCongress.com. Dasha Prewitt. That's Prewett. Pleasure to speak with you, Dasha. Good luck. And
as always, thank you so much.
You bet. Come back and talk with us. That's Dasha Prewitt there at 7:23 as the snow comes down out there. Be careful if you are, in fact, driving this morning. 3 to 6 inches total when it's all said and done, and then it's out of here. Sunny tomorrow. Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
More of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaul on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
I came across an absolutely fabulous column at PJ Media a couple of days ago. Headline, Doctors Finally Get Real About COVID Hospitalizations Amid Omicron Spike. It's authored by Stacy Lennox. And so I said, I got to get Stacy on the show. Have not spoken with her before. Won't be the last time if she continues to pump out products like this. Recovering Fortune 500 executive, healthcare professional, and like I say, contributor there at PJ Media. Miss Lennox, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris. It's great to be here.
Thanks for writing this. Your background is healthcare, as I read in your bio. So you probably know a thing or two and have had interactions with men and women in various professional classes of medicine. And one of the things that I have been really just screaming till I'm almost hoarse in sincere anger is what feels like the Obamacare debate all over again, except this time with even more serious consequences. There seems to be this silence amongst men and women in medicine that makes me furious. Not exclusively, not across the board, but in most cases, it's just silence, if not conformity. And gosh, that it just doesn't feel like it's a time for conformity and silence in science and medicine, is it?
It sure doesn't seem that way, and unfortunately, I think there's an incentive structure inherent in the system, maybe because we've become so centralized in healthcare, that causes doctors to follow the recommendations of their medical boards and their professional associations, and they've become more like employees. So if you look, and you're looking at the doctors that are speaking out, They're like the American College of Physicians and Surgeons, right? Or American Association, excuse me. Those are all still independent healthcare providers. They're not employees of a hospital system. And I think that gives them more freedom to speak out because they can't be silenced by what is literally an employer. And we have a whole bunch of ancillary staff at this point, including pharmacists and even medical boards, which are really only supposed to take care of really serious violations, practicing medicine at this point and telling doctors what they can and can't prescribe, telling doctors what they have to tell their patients about vaccines. I mean, it's really unprecedented.
I'm going to be doing an interview with a woman in a different part of the country that is putting her own private money in with a doctor, mm-hmm. and she will be opening a monoclonal antibody facility. And she's doing it because she took them, and it works very well, and she's passionate about it. I took them as well. I'm passionate about it. Mm-hmm. But this is yet one example. This is an anecdotal example. It's one subject of many throughout this COVID discussion of the last 2 years. Monoclonals and this treatment that Ron DeSantis is trying to open up and make available as fast as he can all over Florida, the other states like Pennsylvania and other states around the country, where for some inexplicable reason, doctors are almost literally fighting against its use or aren't aware of it or don't want to talk about it as a treatment or states won't let them. It's insane, yeah. Stacey.
That was one of the biggest failures of the entire pandemic. If I'm getting my dates correctly, and this is close, it may not be perfect. The EUA for monoclonal antibodies Regeneron, the ones that President Trump received, was given in November of 2020. Dr. Fauci did not add them to the NIH protocols, which hospitals are incentivized to follow financially, until I believe May, when he thought things were really calming down. And then he didn't talk about them again publicly until Ron DeSantis started opening those sites. I literally wrote an article at the beginning of June saying, here's the five things every Republican governor should be doing in their state to exit COVID stand. And one of them was making monoclonal antibodies broadly available. I was so thrilled when DeSantis did that.
And do you still, just to be clear on that, as a form of treatment, I know Biden, you know, he gave this speech about how Pfizer's got the pill and it's still going to take months, but he's doubled up on an order that's going to take months. I mean, I know there is a supply issue in manufacturing these, but aren't we now fully stocked and aware of the availability of therapeutics and that they work? So, you know, this notion that it's the shot and only the shot and that's all we can talk about is the shot. We should all be disabused of that by now, shouldn't we?
I think we really should. The shot isn't working with Omicron. And I know the health experts really like to say, oh, well, it's going to make sure that you suffer from milder disease with Omicron. There's really no evidence for that. The disease was quite mild in South Africa with a 30% vaccination rate. So we also know from actual studies that the virus lives in your nose and throat and doesn't really invade your lungs. So that by definition is a less severe disease. The real thing that I have a problem with, and when I was a nurse, I worked with children who had what are called orphan diseases. They're very rare, and they don't have a bunch of medications specifically approved for their disease process. However, their disease processes all included symptoms that we treat regularly. So when you look at COVID, you have a viral replication phase, then some people recover. Then you have a pneumonia kind of phase with a lot of inflammation in the lungs, and then you have clotting. We know how to treat inflammation in the lungs, and we know how to treat clotting. We have existing medications to do that. The complete lack of curiosity and clinical judgment that doctors were using to treat known symptoms with known solutions for over a year is one of the most shocking features of this pandemic. The entire push should always have been to treat people early to keep them out of the hospital, because ventilators don't work either. We know that. It should be high-flow nasal cannula oxygen. It should be ECMO, positive pressure. Ventilators are not the answer, but we're still putting people on them.
Stacey Lennox is with us. PJmedia.com is where you can read one of her latest pieces, headlined "Doctors Finally Get Real About COVID Hospitalizations Amid Omicron Spike." The governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, said something kind of extraordinary for a Democrat. They have been talking about hospitalization for almost 2 years. And now all of a sudden, for the first time, you're starting to hear, and I think this is kind of some of the thrust of your piece, people are now starting to say, well, let's parse this a little bit. Let's talk nuance. Same with children's hospitals. I know executives inside children's hospitals at the highest level who have said, these kids that are in our hospitals and are testing positive with COVID, that's not what's hospitalizing them. So there's a difference. Right. If I'm hit by a truck and I happen to test positive for COVID, I'm in the hospital because I got hit by a truck, not COVID.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I started writing about this months ago. There were a couple of assessments done in California where one study said pediatric hospitals for COVID were overestimated by 40%. You had a couple in Central California saying deaths from COVID were overestimated by at least 25%. You started seeing the CDC, after their vaccination drive, when they were originally monitoring breakthrough infections and deaths, they were actually looking at each death to determine whether it could actually be attributed to the symptoms of COVID. But they never did that in their general statistics after they changed the way you reported a death. Like how these numbers have been done since the beginning of the pandemic are extremely unprecedented. But again, you had really perverse financial incentives, and still do to some extent through the CARES bill, to cause hospitals to behave this way, to test everyone, to put it on the chart, to include the ICD-9 code. It's all about reimbursement. And if you look at the profitability of hospital systems over the last 2 years, it's rather astounding. And that's your tax dollars.
Mm. Stacey, the nurses know, don't they? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know a few, and you were one. Nurses are smart people. They're on the ground floor, and they literally see all of these things. And I'm struck. 700 workers who failed to comply with the vaccine mandate no longer working at the Mayo Clinic, one of our preeminent clinics. I know some former nurses who have left the field because of this mandate. Nurses are smart people, and they're the closest to us when we're in the hospital. And when you start to hear nurses in mass say, "I'd rather not take the shot. I'll just be out of work," that should cause all of us pause, I would think.
I would think so too. And you're even starting to hear some doctors who are associated with hospital systems, like Dr. Marty McCary, really starting to say stop with this vaccine mandate. He really jumped on board when it came to the kids, and watching the FDA and the CDC completely do an end run around their own process. Okay, they did not bring their expert committees in to evaluate boosters for 12 to 15 year olds. And then they just approved them and recommended them. They have no idea. And you have a study out of Kaiser Northwest saying, I believe for 12 to 17 year olds, there's a 1 in 1800 chance of myocarditis. According to claims data and actual diagnosis codes. And we're just going to, like, let states mandate these for kids.
Crazy.
And it's especially risky for boys. I mean, this is like a war on boys to a whole new level.
Yeah, I don't, I've been very clear about the shot. If you're an adult, if you're 18, 8 years of age and whatever, you know, whatever, you do you. But I have no compunction about telling you, I think you're a certified lunatic if you're injecting children with this stuff. I just do.
Absolutely.
I think you're a lunatic.
We just
kids aren't getting sick with this, Stacey, as you know.
No,
kids aren't. It's just it's ridiculous.
Not. Yeah, they're just not. But the number of things they have actually gone and admitted since the good people have started getting COVID, all the triple vaxxed and boosted, and all the people who wear six masks on their face, and Nicole Wallace, you know, you have Leanna Wen saying cloth masks are a decoration. It's like, yes, they are. You know,
are you seeing a break?
COVID.
I mean, that is the thrust of your piece. Doctors finally get real about COVID hospitalizations. Is there a break? What? Something's changed, and it seemed very sudden. I have a stack in front of me just when I returned from break, Stacey. Biden, schools should stay open despite Omicron wave. There is no federal solution. Nate Silver talking about the Puerto Rico surge, but only 300 people hospitalized and how that's good news. Cheryl Atkinson talking about the COVID misinformation, and we're going to have her on soon. Fauci, we should really start talking about separating who's counted in the hospital. Fauci's talking that way. I'm just looking at all my stories here. Reinfection, natural immunity. You're starting to hear these things for the first time in 2 years. What's going on?
Well, I think they almost have to, because all of their good little sheep, right, are now getting Omicron. Like, you had some breakthrough infections with Delta. This is an equal opportunity. I don't care what the statistics they're telling you are. I know so many people who have had this, who've been vaccinated, boosted. I mean, yeah, that's anecdotal, but I can't be the only one. And you're seeing it even in the public. You got Whoopi Goldberg. You got all these NFL players. You got, you know, people on TV. I forget. There was one who's now broadcasting from his home. I think it was Cavuto, maybe. I can't remember.
My email box is full of listeners who are sharing with me this week their story of being double vaxxed and boosted and sick. Yeah.
I recovered very early in the pandemic before we really knew what was going on. And luckily, my doctor treated me as if I had the flu. So I actually got medications that worked because he thought I was just a late flu diagnosis and couldn't get Tamiflu. I believe I recovered from Omicron last week. It was like a 2-day set of the sniffles. But I couldn't get a test, so I don't know.
What of the testing,
Stacey? That's the other thing they're dealing with. Nobody can really get tested very easily, so they kind of have to say it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, that's another component to this that I'm very confused about. We're back foot on the gas pedal on this. Biden's working with the Post. I just got this email alert last night in my email. The Washington Post, alert, alert! Biden and Post Office strike deal. And I'm like, what the hell? I don't even know, like a labor? I didn't even know. I open it up. It's about tests getting mailed to people. I'm like, what are we?
Like,
what
is your personal home? Like, I don't need one now.
What is that? What is the point? What are we doing? Why?
I don't know. You know, my advice is this. Dr. Peter McCullough has some great advice for what to do if you're starting to not feel well or you've been exposed. I suggest you go look for what they did in the country of Bangladesh that basically stopped the spread of the virus. compounding pharmacies will fill your prescription for the most part from America's Frontline Doctors or the Frontline Care Consortium. There are ways to work around the standard medical system. And if you can do it, do it. Go ahead and get yourself a pack of ivermectin. Go ahead and get yourself a pack of hydroxychloroquine or other drugs that you feel comfortable with after doing your own homework. Because the establishment healthcare system is just not there to help you at this point.
I tell you something, if you're enterprising and you have the funds and the time, I'd in a hot second, I'd partner with somebody in medicine and open one of these monoclonal sites myself.
Yeah, my understanding is American Frontline Doctors are starting to open independent offices across the country. I think you're going to find, after this pandemic, it is unprecedented to look at someone who's ill and say, there's nothing I can do to help you, come back when your lips are blue.
Yeah.
That is the most disturbing thing about this pandemic. And I think people who are paying attention are starting to understand that has a lot to do with the consolidation of our healthcare system. And if they do open a system of independent practices across the nation, I think you're going to find people accessing them more than you think.
Yeah, this is, I mean, Stacey, this is what we warned about in the early 2000s when we were discussing Obamacare and federalizing our medicine. This is what we warned about, rationing of care and not having choice. And by the way, that you would set up a system of boutique medicine where people of means would be paying cash for private health care. That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because if you look at the federal guidelines, Joe Rogan was not eligible for monoclonal antibodies.
Wow. Stacey,
you have
this
to be
is important.
Over 65 or have significant pre-existing conditions. Like, he's a very healthy individual, and I believe he's 52. He's not obese. I mean, like, he didn't click any of the boxes unless he's diabetic, and I don't know it.
Yeah, my wife and I got them.
Same with Tim Pool.
Yeah. My wife and I got them. I mean, I guess we're overweight. I mean, by designation, I happen to be in an area where they said, okay, well, if you're a little paunchy, then you can have it. They didn't. I mean, fortunately, I wasn't hassled about it. But I know there are other states. I mean, I get emails from around the country. There are states that just you can't find it. You know, Pennsylvania is one where you have a very difficult time even finding access to it. And when you do find people that are doing it, they say, we don't do it anymore because it doesn't work.
Well, I think that's one other place that Ron DeSantis was really far ahead, because when the federal government pulled the distribution of monoclonal antibodies central again, which they did at the end of the Delta wave after DeSantis opened all the clinics. That's not a new thing they're doing. They did that several months ago, so you kind of knew what was coming. DeSantis went out and made a deal with GSK, and they have the monoclonal antibody that's still effective against Omicron. So he reserved and bought the GSK brand that will still work, reportedly. But his Surgeon General, Dr. Lodapo, made a good point. It's not all Omicron. Some of this is still Delta. And symptomatically, if somebody's having a lot of lung inflammation or clotting factors, you know it's Delta because Omicron doesn't do that.
Yes. Boy, what an important voice you are, Stacey. I'm sorry that we've met so late in the coverage of this, but I hope that we can stay in touch, because I suspect at least through this year, Democrats are going to try to keep this alive and well as an issue. How does this end? I'll close, if we could, very briefly, Stacey. How do you see this ending? Does it take a political conclusion, meaning Republicans sweep Congress and we just stop making this a front page issue every day? Or how does this end, do you think? Because it's not going away. Sensible people know this is a virus that will mutate and evolve like the flu year after year after year. So how does this end, and do we go back to normal?
I actually think it ends when Fauci's gone.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, he is the only consistent mastermind behind this entire pandemic response. And if anybody would look at his history on AIDS, he has made every single blunder he made during the AIDS epidemic. Like, I don't even know how he's still in charge.
Stacey Lennox at PJ Media, pjmedia.com. Doctors finally get real about COVID hospitalizations of an Omicron spike. She's a healthcare pro in her day, and so she comes at this with a great knowledge base. And we're grateful for your voice, and we hope we can have you back, Stacey.
Thank you. I'd be happy to come back anytime, Chris. Take care.
753. Quick break here. 610-850-0990, the number. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com.
More of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Friend of mine just sent an interesting little tidbit from the Philadelphia Business Journal. This probably won't come as a shock to you, Fast Eddie. U-Haul's growth index, U-Haul, the people that, you know, you rent the truck to move. Pennsylvania is now 48th in terms of population growth. That is people moving into Pennsylvania. 48th, nearly dead last.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Your common sense is really keeping me sane. Thank you.
I start in the morning with Chris, and then I go all the way through the day until I get out of my car when I come home.
Good morning, man. Love your show.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
All right, let's listen to some of the stupid old man we're supposed to pretend is president again. Just to set the stage. Actually, you know what? Before we do that, Vice President Cackle Britches yesterday. Number 8, Fast Eddie, if you please. Making one of the more absurd. This is truly a shark-jumping moment, I believe. In my view, we'll see what the colonel says, but in my view, this is the shark-jump moment of yesterday.
Certain dates echo throughout history, including dates that instantly remind all who have lived through them where they were and what they were doing when our democracy came under assault. Dates that occupy not only a place on our calendars, but a place in our collective memory. December 7th, 1941, September 11th, 2001, and January 6th, 2021.
Yeah, this is, as Colonel Kurt Flichter has pointed out before, like the movie Clueless, Fetch. Quit trying to make Fetch a thing. It's not a thing. Quit making that word a thing. Like, there's certain things they're clearly trying to make trend or happen. This will not happen. You understand? I hope you do. I think you do. You understand that January 6th is not a day that will live in infamy in this country. No one is... Claire McCaskill, the former Missouri senator, said she and her family will gather each 4th of July and watch the footage of January 6th. This is not real. It's gaslighting. It's not going on in a memory moment in people's homes. People don't stop and ponder the day. They desperately want you to. Sloppy Choppers had a memorial service last night or some such thing, a candlelight vigil. Colonel Kurt Schlichter. No, go ahead. Give me a little her. Why not? What the hell?
U.S. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, yeah. U.S. Capitol Police Officer Howard Livingood, Metropolitan Officer Jeffrey Smith, U.S. Capitol Police Officer Billy Evans of a later assault. Now I ask all members to rise for a moment of silence in their memory.
Yeah, there was one death on January 6th, and who was it? Ashley Babbitt, a woman who was assassinated, unarmed, by a Capitol policeman, incidentally. Anyway, here to discuss it, a guy who sees this with the steely, cold resolve that you need in times like these. He's my colleague at townhall.com, author of the Kelly Turnbull series. It's Colonel Kurt Schlichter. Colonel, Happy New Year and ahoy.
Happy New Year, Chris. You know, at least Jeffrey Toobin had the dignity to do it on a closed Zoom call.
It really was, wasn't it? It was pleasuring themselves over and over all day yesterday.
Yeah, if they kept it up another day, I fear they might go blind.
Are they going to achieve this idea that this is a cornerstone day in our conscience?
The highlight wasn't when, heels up Harris. did the date thing. I could just see the guys, the new people in her speech writing pool, because everybody quits on her. They're like, how do we go? Okay, get this theme, dates. 9/11.
Here's my theory. You tell me if I'm wrong, because I don't know if I'm being stupidly optimistic here or not. But they are trying so hard to leverage and sell a fear that democracy itself is under attack. But I say the problem they have with that is, even if people were to incline to believe it, they've so exhausted everyone with COVID. I don't think the American public has the capacity, even if it wanted to embrace January 6th and be afraid of Trump and his voters and what's coming in the next election. Like, it's too much. I think they've overdone it. That's my working theory.
As I was filling up my car at $5 a gallon.
Yeah.
And I looked over across the pump, and there's somebody there with a Prius, and he was muttering, "You know what bothers me, Kurt?" I said, "What bothers you?" He said, this attack on democracy, Trump's coup. You know, there was a guy with a horn, and he sat in Nancy Pelosi. And I said, "Yeah, it's a real problem." "Oh, $76 to fill up my tank." And he said, "Yeah, I'm worried about my democracy and insurrections." These guys who apparently have to buy lotion by the freaking bucket load. Look, I want to encourage this, because this kind of a frivolous onanism is just going to destroy them next year.
I think you're right.
The next part is it's too hard to vote. This leads into that, because they basically want to make it easier. I want to make it harder to vote, because I think stupid, lazy people should have a more difficult time voting, and I want to discourage them. And this is a problem for Democrats, because stupid and lazy people are key constituencies.
Colonel Kurt Schlichter is with us. Townhall.com, the Kelly Turnbull series, a must-read, now multiple books. What are you, six? Seven?
Six. And I'm going to rewriting the seventh. I'm about to turn in my... my next nonfiction to Regnery, which is called The Fall and Rise of America. So I'm going to turn that in this weekend. So I got a lot of stuff going on, man.
We're making a commitment to do maybe our first in-person post-COVID gathering with you, perhaps this summer in Philadelphia. So I hope we can get that pulled off. We're going to work hard to get that done.
We're
going to
make that happen. That's got to be a thing.
Let me ask you about what is sort of the uncomfortable, embrace by some, it seems, in the Republican ranks. There's obviously the Cheney thing, which that kind of goes without saying. That's a different deal. They're making a lot of Dick Cheney showing up in solidarity with his daughter last night. But I am interested in...
Wait, you can't just pass that by.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. Go ahead. What do you think?
Democrats going, okay, well, first, like 2 days ago, they have an op-ed by Jimmy freaking Carter, who said, "My democracy is in danger. It's a danger. My democracy." Okay, Jimmy Carter. Okay, Jimmy Carter didn't convince the conservatives. Who do we need? Who's going to really turn the crank for those Trump guys and really turn them around and get to our side? I know. Dick Cheney. Let's wheel his ass out here. Shotgun Dick. And his sister Liz, or daughter Liz, whatever the hell she is. I don't know. I think he anaerobically spawns via spores. Because I don't want to think about Dick Cheney having sex. I'm just saying that. So Dick Cheney, they wheeled Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney said, this has sure changed since I was here. Yes, it has. We're not in any stupid wars at the moment. Thank you, Donald Trump. You venomous monster. You lizard person.
They're showing it in a loop.
The Democrats are like, all the reporters are like going, Mr. Cheney, you're great. You're wonderful. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, at least I hope you bought them dinner for.
It's amazing. I mean, Nancy Pelosi and Eric Swalwell, they're showing in a loop over and over and over again. Pelosi and Swalwell genuflecting, shaking his hand on the House floor yesterday. Like, it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Dick Cheney!
Man, he hasn't gotten so erotic since Fang Fang was still in the country.
But I mean, this was Darth Vader. There was no more sinister, dark, and evil a force in all of Republican politics than Dick Cheney once upon a time, Kurt Schlichter.
I know, it's like Yoda going, new friend I have, Vader Darth.
Okay, so let me move on, though, to something more uncomfortable, because this I don't get, and I'm going to play
with
it.
How do you get more uncomfortable?
Well, Tucker Carlson with Ted Cruz.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah.
So let's...
I haven't seen some so bad since Ned Beatty said, come on, canoe is fun.
So we're going to play some of this now, and I would love
Holy
to get your reaction.
Crap.
Here we go.
Every conservative appreciates Ted Cruz because he's one of the smartest and most articulate people in the Congress, and he's conservative. But he referred publicly to what happened on January 6th as, quote, a violent terror attack. Here it is.
We are approaching a solemn anniversary this week, and it is an anniversary of a violent terrorist attack on the Capitol, where we saw the men and women of law enforcement demonstrate incredible courage, incredible bravery, risk their lives to defend the men and women who serve in this Capitol.
Senator Cruz was game enough to come on tonight. We appreciate that. He joins us now. Senator, thanks so much for coming on. So I guess I mean, there are a lot of dumb people in the Congress. You're not one of them. I think you're smarter than I am. And you never use words carelessly. And yet you called this a terror attack when by no definition was it a terror attack. That's a lie. You told that lie on purpose. And I'm wondering why you did.
Well, Tucker, thank you for having me on. When you aired your episode last night, I sent you a text shortly thereafter and said, listen, I'd like to go on because the way I phrased things yesterday, it was sloppy and it was frankly dumb.
I don't buy that. Whoa. I don't buy that. Look, I've known you a long time since before you went to the Senate. You're a Supreme Court contender. You take words as seriously as any man who's ever served in the Senate. And every word you repeated that phrase, I do not believe that you used that accidentally. I just don't.
And this went on this way. Let's move to the next one because I don't want to play too much of it because you can go watch it yourself if you want. Colonel Kurt Schlichter with us. A little more. The second one here where Tucker jumps in and says it one more time.
But in this context, I get why people were angry because we've had a year of the corrupt corporate media and Democrats claiming anyone who objected to the election fraud. And by the way, remember what was happening during
Wait. Can I ask? Hold on. You work in the Senate. I guess I just don't believe you. And I mean that with respect because I have such respect for your acuity and your precision. And I've seen it on display. I've covered you as a reporter. I know how you speak. And you have sat there for a year and watched people use language to distort the events of that day. Intentionally. Insurrection. Coup.
Of course, terrorism. Insurrection. Saying it's an insurrection is a political term. It's a lie. I've repeatedly denounced it. And when it comes to, look, I was focusing on what I normally say. That what you aired was a little 15-second snippet. What I normally say.
All right. And then this goes on from there. Tucker asks, who's Ray Epps? It was rough. What do you say, Colonel?
Oh, man.
Why did he do this? What happened to Ted Cruz? What's going on?
I have no idea. I really don't. But look, I got to say, first of all, there are a couple things. I'm a litigator. I'm a trial lawyer. I go in and argue in front of juries. He's an appellate lawyer. He sits there and carefully writes briefs and things. So the idea that he's out there shooting from the hip, like Tex with his six gun, not buying it. I don't know what he was thinking. Here's the thing about Ted Cruz. Nobody likes him. He has no charisma. And he has the judgment of a drunken gnat. I mean, this, remember the Cancun thing?
Oh, yeah.
What idiot decides, well, let's see, my constituency is snowed in and frozen. I think I'm going to go to Cancun.
Let me offer something.
I know you're not
going to buy this, and you're not going to like it, but I'm going to offer it up as a possibility, and you tell me if you think I'm crazy. Here's what I know about Ted Cruz. I know a little something about him and his wife, Heidi. They love their kids. He is a great father, and he loves his daughters. And there was a piece written, I don't remember where, the Washington Post or whatever, that just highlights the fact that one of his daughters has this TikTok account where she's, like Kellyanne Conway's daughter, starting to make a lot of noise about how she doesn't agree politically with her dad. And so this was reported. And I have this, and this was just this past week. My working theory is that this really rocked Ted Cruz to his core, that his daughter and the press, this fissure has been exploited. And perhaps it's that. That's just a working theory. Do you buy it?
Well, I don't think it says much about him as I'm going to conform my behavior to please a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a teenage daughter, and there's literally nothing she likes about me.
I do too. Same thing.
Okay. I mean, do you think I go, well, gosh, I better reexamine everything I deeply believe because my kid's upset.
Yeah.
In what universe would that? The thing is, he's got terrible judgment.
Yeah,
he's got no charisma.
Is it possible?
I gave this guy thousands of dollars in the last election. Before I was a Trump supporter.
I was too. I walked the plank for Ted Cruz. I went at Donald Trump. I have to own it and say that I was a total Cruz backer. I didn't want Trump. I wanted Cruz.
I have nothing to be ashamed of. I didn't believe some former Democrat from New York saying all these things I wanted to hear was actually going to do them.
Yeah.
but he did. You look at this with Cruz, it's like, and he's the guy going, I'm a viable candidate for 2024. For what?
So you don't believe this was an accident or a clumsy speech?
I don't know what it was. I don't understand it. Sometimes some things are so stupid that you sit there and you're kind of in awe. They managed to pull off something so transcendently dumb.
Well, as you know, and this is just obvious, as you know, what Tucker's point was, and he made it plain, was when someone like him, who was one of the only holdouts with guys like Josh Hawley, when someone like him starts to lend credibility to Liz Cheney and helps them make the argument, it greatly wounds us all.
It's
devastating.
Now I think we're going to see plenty of, we'll take Cruz at the terrorists.
Right.
And it's like, right. We don't need this. Look, I'm always for sacrificing somebody who's, the weakest part of the herd as a object lesson. We did it with Kristi Noem. I'd rather we find out that they're soft now and gut them. Then have them jeb up our campaign later.
You've turned jeb into a verb! Exclamation point! I love it. Jeb it up.
You jebbed all over yourself.
So, bottom line, I say yesterday was obviously it was Trump living rent free in these people's heads. Have you ever seen a sitting president, supposed president, talk about the ex president like he's still running against him like that? I've never seen anything like it.
No. They've got a real problem. They've got a desiccated old pervert as a president. He's a terrible president. They're doing a terrible job, and everybody hates them. These are guys, look, they're so bad, Hispanics are polling evenly with Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
The ethnic group that they hope to keep perpetually on their plantation and secure the future, has basically said adios. I mean, the size of the problem that they're facing is so enormous. In large part because they cannot go back. They can't turn around and go, you know, this is all stupid. We better do something to cut gas prices. But that'll offend the angry weather cause. We can't do that. You know, I mean, they're stuck because they have this, like, near religious belief, this kind of bizarre pagan secular thing going on with all their idiotic ideas. So it's not just like they have policy. These are like moral decisions because they have a giant hole in them that God used to fill and now idiocy does. And they can't change. So they're kind of stuck. So they're flailing around for something. And today it's the democracy. And most people are going, you know, I'm not an idiot. And I can figure out how to vote. So this really isn't a big problem for me. Plus, if you're too stupid to vote, I'm like really not that concerned. Oh, and here's my favorite about how like voter ID, which one of the key parts is the ban, right, of this voter circle thing. They don't have a problem with it when it comes to your vaccine passport. So if you literally show two things, your ID and your vaccine passport, that's easy. And you could do that every day. But once every 4 years, you can't whip out your driver's license because that's something the Klan would make you do, which is also a Democrat organization, by the way.
That's right. It's perfectly rational to make you show medical documentation to go see a concert or a game or have a steak dinner. But it's outrageous.
You literally have to get two IDs. You have to get your medical ID to show that you don't have a glorified cold. And you have to show your driver's license. And you have to do that if you want to go, like, see Taylor Swift, right?
CNN, by the way, chilling development. Chilling development this morning. Currently. Chilling. They have video now. Vice President Harris was inside the DNC when the elusive pipe bomber acted back in 2020. Chilling development. They've got now new surveillance footage of the guy that tried to set up pipe bombs in front of the DNC and the RNC. It turns out while he was placing the pipe bomb, Kamala Harris was inside the building. Chilling new development this morning, Kurt Schlichter.
Was Montel Williams in there, too? I keep saying that. They're stuck with Kamala Harris because, you know, crusty McOldenheimer's not running again. We all know that.
They're trying to make us care about her. And this way, I was saying earlier, it's telling me that there's a cauliflower shortage. I can't care. I don't like cauliflower. You're never going to make me care.
And here's the big thing. I don't want a president who knows what Montel Williams tastes like.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, it's Colonel Kurt Schlichter, townhall.com. Thank you, Colonel. Ahoy.
Ahoy. Looking forward to July.
8:24. I believe you should always go out on a punchline, if possible. And that's about as strong a one as he's going to deliver for the new year, as far as I'm concerned. I don't want a president who knows what Montel Williams tastes like. You can go ahead and write that one down for the weekend and share it. This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. I've been trying hard to reach you because I don't know what to do. I forgot it's Open Line Friday, too, by the way. I didn't mean to forget. We've been very, very busy today. So come on in. Line open for you if you care to join us on this Open Line Friday. It's our homage to Rush. Haven't done that in the new year yet. 610-850-0990, the number. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Let's spend a little time with this because I do think it's important. Tucker and Ted. We played it a little bit with Colonel. I'm going to open the phone because I know there are a lot of Cruz fans in this audience. I am one. And just, you know, full disclosure, I count the team of Ted Cruz as friends, personal friends. not Ted Cruz himself, but a lot of people that work for Ted Cruz and work with Ted Cruz. I know the Cruz team well. I have not bothered them about this. I could pick up the phone and physically call and say, what the hell's going on? I could. I'm not going to do it. I'm just watching, waiting to see what the hell. I think Ted Cruz is an inherently good person. I cannot explain what he did here, though. I don't get it. So I don't know how you feel about him. I'm not asking you to feel any way about him, nor am I defending him. It was extraordinarily uncomfortable to watch last night. I would love to get your thoughts at 610-850-0990. Was this an honest mistake and people ought to lay off Ted Cruz? Trump called him Lion Ted again yesterday. So any friendship they had is now over, I guess. So here was the exchange last night. 610-850-0990. If you care to opine as to what exactly we're watching here.
Every conservative appreciates Ted Cruz because he's one of the smartest and most articulate people in the Congress, and he's conservative. But he referred publicly to what happened on January 6th as, quote, a violent terror attack. Here it is.
We are approaching a solemn anniversary this week, and it is an anniversary of a violent terrorist attack on the Capitol, where we saw the men and women of law enforcement demonstrate incredible courage, incredible bravery, risk their lives to defend the men and women who serve in this Capitol.
Senator Cruz was game enough to come on tonight. We appreciate that. He joins us now. Senator, thanks so much for coming on. So I guess what I mean, there are a lot of dumb people in the Congress. You're not one of them. I think you're smarter than I am. And you never use words carelessly. And yet you called this a terror attack when by no definition was it a terror attack. That's a lie. You told that lie on purpose, and I'm wondering why you did.
Well, Tucker, thank you for having me on. When you aired your episode last night, I sent you a text shortly thereafter and said, listen, I'd like to go on because the way I phrased things yesterday, it was sloppy and it was frankly dumb. And
I don't buy that. Whoa. I don't buy that. Look, I've known you a long time since before you went to the Senate. You were a Supreme Court contender. You take words as seriously as any man who's ever served in the Senate. And every word you repeated that phrase, I do not believe that you used that accidentally. I just don't.
As a result of my sloppy phrasing, it's caused a lot of people to misunderstand what I meant. Let me tell you what I meant to say. What I was referring to are the limited number of people who engaged in violent attacks against police officers. Now, I think you and I both agree that if you assault a police officer, you should go to jail. That's who I was talking about. And the reason the phrasing was sloppy is I have talked dozens, if not hundreds of times. I've drawn a distinction. I wasn't saying that the thousands of peaceful protesters supporting Donald Trump are somehow terrorists. I wasn't saying the millions of patriots across the country supporting President Trump are terrorists. And that's what a lot of people have misunderstood
that
comment.
What you just said doesn't make sense. So if somebody assaults a cop, he should be charged and go to jail. I couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. We've said that for years. But that person's still not a terrorist. How many people have been charged with terrorism on January 6th? Like, why'd you use that word? You're playing into the other side's characterization that, as Joe Kent just explained, allows them to define an entire population as foreign combatants. And you know that. So why'd you do it?
So, Tucker, let me answer you directly. The reason I use that word, for a decade, I have referred to people who violently assault police officers as terrorists. I've done so over and over and over again. If you look at all the assaults we've seen across the country, I've called that terrorism over and over again. That being said, Tucker, I agree with you. It was a mistake to say that yesterday. And the reason is what you just said, which is we've now had a year of Democrats in the media twisting words and trying to say that all of us are terrorists, trying to say you're a terrorist, I'm a terrorist. And so, look, I don't like people who assault cops, and I stand up and defend cops. And the reason I use that word is that's the word I've always used for people that violently attack cops.
Okay. So what of this? Is Ted Cruz's apology sincere? Now, again, just to clarify, Tucker says, I just don't believe that you're sorry because I think you fully intended to do what you did and say what you said. Here's just a little more. That second, we don't have to listen to it all, but here's the follow-up.
But in this context, I get why people were angry because we've had a year of the corrupt corporate media and Democrats claiming anyone who objected to the election fraud. And by the way, remember what was happening during
those protests. Can I ask, hold on, you work in the Senate? I guess I just don't believe you. And I mean that with respect, because I have such respect for your acuity and your precision. And I've seen it on display. I've covered you as a reporter. I know how you speak. And you have sat there for a year and watched people use language to distort the events of that day. Intentionally. Insurrection. Coup.
Of course, terrorism. Insurrection. Saying it's an insurrection is a political term. It's a lie. I've repeatedly denounced it. And when it comes to, look, I was focusing on what I normally say. That what you aired was a little 15-second snippet. What I normally say is violence is wrong, peaceful protest is right. If you engage in violence, you should be prosecuted. If you're speaking, you have a right to speak. I say that all the time.
Well, amen, and I agree.
In that snippet.
So who's Ray Epps, by the way, since you are a senator? Like, he and this other guy are clearly encouraging the crowd to commit crimes. Neither one has been arrested or charged. What is that, do you think?
So I think that is a very good question. I don't know who Ray Epps is. I've seen that video multiple times. It's disturbing.
Right?
He's clearly urging the crowd to violate the law. When you see the crowd start chanting, Fed, 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 for him to appear on the FBI's most wanted list and come off, it certainly suggests he was working for the FBI. That's not conclusive, but that's the obvious implication. And the Attorney General and the Department of Justice won't answer the question. Tucker, I can tell you, I joined with a number of other senators trying to get the
sense of it. 610-850-0990. Look, I don't want to overreact about it, but this was completely out of character for Cruz. Obviously, I mean it doesn't make sense unless it's some kind of strategy. I do agree with Tucker. Ted Cruz doesn't say anything by accident. That's 100% true. So why? I will also say that Cruz, for whatever reason, either calculated incorrectly or recognized the incorrect nature of the calculation and, you know, owned up to it. And I don't know. It looks like a massive wound for Ted Cruz. And, you know, personally, I like the man a lot, and I've had no reason to break with him politically ever. But this is the kind of thing, you know, we're back to Trump calling him Lion Ted. And do I think Trump's going to let this go? No. And I hate it. I hate when these sorts of things happen, particularly to people that I think are good, principled people. But this is one of those things that, I mean, if Cruz thinks he's running, he can officially forget it now, I'm afraid, based on this. 610-850-0990. Let's go to Mike in Chalfont. On Open Line Friday. Hey, Mike, I'm glad you called. Welcome in.
Well, yeah, hi, Chris. Good morning. Well, one thing, if Cruz has been a career politician for so long, he should know that every time he opens his mouth, if he accidentally makes a slip, they'll use it against him forever.
Yeah.
So he should be smarter than that. So I don't know why he did it, but at this point, I'd rather vote Tucker for president than Cruz.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. 610-850-0990. Let's go to Don in Doylestown. Don, I'm glad you called. Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Good morning.
Hi there, Chris. How are you?
I'm well, sir. Thank you. How do you read this situation?
Always an interesting show. One thing the Republicans are good at is the circular firing squad, no matter what the event.
I hate it. You know, on a day like yesterday, that's the problem with it, is you can't, in a time like this, on a day like that, you just can't afford to have something like this happen, you know?
No. And I feel in many ways, as you do, about Ted Cruz. I admire him a lot. Like you, I liked him. In lieu of Don, or early on, I was a Cruz guy. I guess if you talk long enough in public, you're going to put your foot in one's mouth. And the only thing I can say, I guess, positive about Ted at this point is has he ever voted in a way where we've wondered what's he done? I guess if we look at what he's done and not what he's said, I hate to throw him overboard completely.
Well, that's, you know, and I think in that way, it's very similar to Trump. If you get obsessed over just simply words and what somebody says, I mean, I tend to have to look at the way they vote and ultimately what they end up achieving and accomplishing. And if they end up achieving and accomplishing what we believe they should, then I guess I can forgive it or explain it or understand it or shrug it off or whatever. I don't know. It's just, I mean, what's so frustrating is he articulated, and thanks for the call, Don, Ted Cruz articulated exactly why he should never have said what he said. That's what's so frustrating. He actually said, I get why I shouldn't have said it, because they've used words like this against us now for a calendar year. But then Tucker correctly says, so then why did you do it? Nick's in Abington. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Chris. You know, Ted Cruz, he's got all the bona fides of a good conservative, but he's not a fighter. He's not a street fighter. And in these days, you just got to be a street fighter. And I think I remember during the campaign 2016 when he confronted a guy holding a sign, Lion Ted, and he was just so embarrassing. I mean, he tried to take on this guy. He's formidable in a debate. I'm sure if it was just like a classic debate scenario, he would be formidable. But in street fighting, he can't handle it. This is the problem. This is why I couldn't vote for him. Thanks,
so is it a matter of you don't trust him or you just think him weak?
It's not that I don't trust him. It's just that I don't think he's got what it takes to go up against the evil that Trump, for all the people say is bad about him, he is a street fighter. He is fearless. Yeah. He'll say things off the cuff, you know, but he's a street fighter. And he would defend the people who were there peacefully, you know.
Yep.
Cruz just gave in to he just gave it up. It's terrible.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great weekend. Appreciate you listening. 610-850-0990, the number. 610-850-0990. Alan's in Percocet. Alan, good morning. Welcome to Open Line Friday. Glad you called.
Hey, Chris. I've always appreciated Ted Cruz until the other day. It's really unfortunate because, like the previous caller, I've always thought of him as a fighter, but he's come off as the female version of Liz Cheney.
Eesh. So we've gone from Ted Cruz being Ted Cruz to Liz Cheney inside of a couple of days, huh?
Yep.
Yikes. You don't recover from that.
You go from being the trusted fighter to what? Where? Liz Cheney, Fitzpatrick, what's next?
Wow. Okay. Alan, thank you. That is, wow. Team Cruz would hate hearing that. He's Liz Cheney, Fast Eddie.
I mean, I have to think about this one.
610-850-0990, the number on this Open Line Friday. Our homage to the great Rush Limbaugh. This is Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Open Line Friday, Yorktown, Virginia. It's Chris. Thanks for your patience. Chris, fire away. Welcome in.
Hey, thanks for having me. I just want to add my two cents and my perspective to why Cruz said what he said. I think it's no secret that he's trying to make a run for the 2024 presidential election, and he's looking for money. He's trying to appeal to the independents to pull him over to his side. Because we all know conservatives, they're going to vote for whomever gets the GOP nomination, but not the independents.
So he's trying to exploit a fissure with independents who would not support a guy like Trump.
Exactly.
Aha. Will it work?
I don't think so. I think he made a mistake.
Yeah.
But that's the only reason I can think of why he did made such a terrible, uncalculated move.
Chris, thank you. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for listening in Virginia there. In Yunkin country, that's awesome. Chris in Medford Lakes, another Chris. Hello, Chris.
Yeah, hi, Chris. You know what? I think he got caught up in the moment. I'll take Ted Cruz in my corner anytime.
Yeah.
I'm not going to throw him out the window with all the good he has done in the past. And, you know, I was more to get this disappointed in one thing he said. I was more disappointed when Donald Trump wasn't prepared to debate the issues with a weakling like Joe Biden. That really disappointed me.
Interesting. All right, Chris. Thank you, my friend. Let's do one more. Kyle and Malvern. I got about 30 seconds, Kyle. They're yours.
Hey, Chris. So I'm actually the 27-year-old unicorn. I'm actually 28 now. I had a birthday. I called in a couple times.
Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I wanted to say, I think the reason why he said that is because he's actually, I don't think he's going to make a run for the presidential bid, I think, because that would be harder for him to win. I think he's just trying to secure his seat for the future within the Senate.
Ah, okay. Trying to make a play down there in Texas. Kyle, thank you. Great to hear from you. Maybe one of our youngest listeners out there, 27, now 28-year-old Kyle. Great to spend this first week of the new year with you. We'll be back at it Monday. Hope you'll check out the podcast.
This
see you Monday.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. 3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.